Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the outskirts of Washington, D.C. And I've been thinking about what Joe Biden said about Donald Trump. Joe Biden, former Vice President Joe Biden, called Donald Trump an existential threat to the United States. And immediately the media went wild. What do we think of these two old guys slugging it out? And what does this mean for the Democratic race? And why are Biden and Trump insulting each other? The media did everything but listen to what Joe Biden had to say. Let's play just a one-minute clip of what Vice President Joe Biden had to say.
President Trump is in Iowa today. And I hope his presence here will be a clarifying event because Iowa farmers have been crushed by his tariff war with China, and no one knows better than the folks in Iowa. He thinks that being tough is great. Well, it's really easy to be tough when someone else absorbs the pain. Look, I believe that the president is literally an existential threat to America. He is a genuine threat to our core values. And he's a threat to our standing in the world. No president of the United States has ever, since the end of World War II, we built that Atlantic Alliance and NATO, ever threatened to leave NATO. Never gone after our allies, embracing dictators and thugs from Putin to Kim Jong-un. Calling them my friend, sending love letters while he's poking his finger in the eye of our allies. What's going on here? This is really dangerous stuff. The fact of the matter is that 4 years of Donald Trump will be viewed as an aberration in American history. Eight years will fundamentally change who we are as a nation and how we're viewed around the world.
So, again, when former Vice President Joe Biden said that, the media went wild with speculation about 2020 and how he's going to fight Trump and how he's going to fight the nomination. They did everything but consider what he was saying. What did he say? He said Donald Trump was an existential threat to America, to our core values, a threat to our standing in the world. He pointed out that farmers are getting crushed. And more importantly, that it's easy to talk tough when you're bragging about causing someone else's pain. Isn't that what Donald Trump's been about his entire life? Using others to help him? Bragging about causing someone else's pain? Last week, of course, was D-Day, that day when hundreds of thousands of brave United States, Canadian, British, Free French soldiers risked their lives, and tens of thousands lost their lives, to win back freedom for the world. And on that day, on D-Day, Donald Trump decided to attack Bette Midler. Because he felt that attacking Bette Midler was more important than honoring freedom from the Nazis, the sacrifice of hundreds of thousands 75 years ago. It's easy to mock Donald Trump. It's easy to laugh at him. And it's easy to point out how stupid he is or how often he lies or how corrupt he is or how often he's racist or homophobic or transphobic, how often he hates women, how often he attacks Mexicans, and lose sight of his threat to all of us. Donald Trump is, again, he takes over the news cycle. But it's important to recognize that the core threat, the core existential threat, is far bigger than Donald Trump. In fact, I would argue that Donald Trump didn't so much cause this existential threat as he is the symptom of it. An America where we are increasingly at each other's throats. An America where we are increasingly disagreeing on basic facts. Some say 2 plus 2 equals 4. Some say 2 plus 2 equals 5. Some say the world is round. Some say the world is flat. And reminding Americans that there are truths, simple truths, is hard in an audience filled with Fox Newsification, right? Where they're arguing that black is white and true is false and 2 plus 2 equals 5. George Orwell warned us about this in his book 1984. He was 35 years too soon, but the threat remains. And the threat is to our very sense of our minds. It's something that many of us know of as gaslighting. You know what gaslighting is, right? I just learned the other day. It comes from a movie that I need to watch, a movie from the 1940s. But basically, gaslighting is where you try to persuade someone that something they just saw or something obvious or something they believe really isn't true at all, that they are the ones who are crazy for believing something that's obvious, and you're the one who's sane for recognizing a lie. And it flips everything on its head. Nazi propagandist Joseph Goebbels often talked about the big lie and how much easier it is to get people to believe in big lies and conspiracy theories than it is to get people to believe in basic, ordinary, uncomfortable truths. Goebbels, again, the Nazi propagandist, wrote that people, actually Adolf Hitler wrote, that people often make up little lies. They lie about their age. They lie when they tell a bride she's beautiful, even if they don't think she is. Or that a baby is sweet, even if they don't think they are. Little, sometimes kind lies. Those are easy to make. People lie because they're embarrassed. They don't admit to something they've done. That's very common. That's very normal. But big existential lies, lies about who we are as a country, lies about who's out to get us, lies that seek to explain, because the human brain is always seeking for understanding. And unfortunately, we're often seeking for simple understanding. Oh, it's the Jews' fault. Oh, it's the gays' fault. It's the blacks. It's the Mexicans. It's the poor people. It's the millennials. It's the women. It's everyone but me. And this is increasingly growing. It's fascinating because some of this is the appropriation of victim culture. See, we have a long series of oppression in America against almost everyone except straight, white, male, Protestant, Christians from England who have a lot of property and have been here since the 1600s. And who, I mean, that's a tiny, tiny minority, right? We have lots of oppression. I mean, women did not get the right to vote until 100 years ago. The anniversary is this year. Gay people were seen as criminals to be locked up until 50 years ago, the Stonewall Rebellion. Black people could not vote until the Civil Rights era, 54 years ago. To this day, the Trump administration, to this day in 2019, is trying to tell brave, patriotic, trans service members that they cannot serve because of who they are. Even at a time when it's difficult to get people to serve, he wants to kick them out. So oppression is real, right? We know that anti-religious persecution, anti-immigrant persecution, all these persecutions are real. And so when people rise up and say, no, black lives do matter. No, immigrants' lives matter. We shouldn't be locking kids up in cages. Women matter. We shouldn't be treating women's bodies as baby-making machines for man's pleasure. Women actually are humans and have the right to control their own bodies. That sexual orientation is not a choice. Gender identity is not a choice. people have the right to be free. Liberty. What happened to freedom? And you start making all those arguments. Most people, good-minded people, fair-minded people, say, well, of course we believe in equality. We celebrate equality. We have pride in treating people equal under the law. The Constitution of the United States requires, at least since the Civil War, equal protection under the laws. But there are others that see equality as a threat. They see people asking for equal rights as a threat to the overlords. You can call it white privilege. You can call it male privilege. It's like, wait a minute, if we have to hire women too, what about the man who's not that well qualified who doesn't get hired? What about the fact that I used to get a job because I'm white? Now I got to compete with all these black people and Asian people and people from different countries. There's a real fear at being treated equally on the basis of merit. And so you find people complaining about things that are their own fault. Things that, well, they could change. Recently, there's been a lot of, some killings, actually, domestic violence, by a group called the incel community. Have you heard of these guys? They say they're involuntarily celibate. They can't get a woman to have sex with them. And because of that, it's the woman's fault. It's her fault that she won't have sex with a guy who apparently is too abusive or ugly. And I don't mean just physically ugly. I mean morally ugly. And so they're going to kill women rather than deal with their own imperfections. What I find is that there are real victims, and there are people who believe themselves to be victims, like people who say that Christians are victims. Well, Christians are victims in some places in the Arab world. That's true. But not in America. Christians are the majority. No one persecutes Christians in America. If you say happy holidays, that does not persecute people who celebrate Christmas. It's inclusive. So we find that people, in wanting to hold on to their privilege, are insisting that they're somehow a victim if they don't get to have that privilege. And our country is divided. And it's these threats that Donald Trump exacerbates in all his ways. Talk more about it when I come back after the break. 888-48-MARK. Actually, it's a pre-tape. Can't call in. So I'll be back right after the break.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levin. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levin.
Back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. We live in a divided country, and we have an existential threat to our country. And that existential threat is often expressed as Donald Trump. But we need to remember that Trump is the symptom, not the cause, of most of our problems. I mean, sure, he causes a lot of trouble. But when Joe Biden says that, you know, he threatens our core values, that he wants to withdraw from NATO, that he doesn't respect the rest of the world, that he's crushing people who are struggling like farmers. We have to ask ourselves, how much of Donald Trump is reflected in us? Do Americans really believe in harming those below them in order to improve their own status? There's an old rule in comedy. There's two kinds of comedy, right? You can make fun of people who are more powerful than you, and you can make fun of people who are less powerful than you. They call it punching up or punching down, right? You can make fun of the president of the United States, most powerful man in the world, and I agree that's fun. I do it myself, and I think that's a good thing to do, making fun of the powerful, bringing the powerful down low. Got no problem with that. Or you can punch down. You can attack people who are less powerful. Go after people with disabilities. Go after immigrants that don't speak English. Go after people of a different religion or a different gender identity from you. Go after people who have less power than you, maybe go after poor people, attack homeless people, attack someone who's crippled, disabled. I don't know about you, but I don't think that's funny. Some people do. Donald Trump thinks it's funny. We all know how he made fun of a disabled person. We all know how he attacks poor Mexicans. But I think civilized people actually don't think it's funny. I think we're horrified to make jokes about children ripped away from their mothers and placed in cages until they die, never seeing their parents again. That's not funny. Sometimes liberals are considered being sentimental. Oh, liberals, you care about children being separated from their moms and dying alone. How politically incorrect. Well, sorry. I do care. And if you don't care, I think you're a monster. So, if you want to know one main difference, I think, between the Democratic and Republican parties, is that Democrats are always looking for a way to lift people up, to make people's lives better, to end the structural inequalities we have in our country. You can't help it if you're born black or gay. You can't help it if you're an immigrant to this country. It's not your choice where you're born. Whatever religion you practice should be your decision. But we can help how our country treats people who are different. I've always argued that diversity is our strength. You want to know why we have the strongest economy on earth? I don't think it's the number of people. We're not the largest nation on the planet in terms of population. We've got lots of great natural resources, but we're not the largest in terms of area either. We've got smart people, but they're smart people in Europe and Africa and Asia. Why is our economy so great? Why are we so strong? Why is our cultural greatness recognized all around the world, so that people play American songs and American movies far more than any other country? Well, I would argue it's our diversity. Our diversity is our strength. And that's not just a tagline. I want you to seriously think about it. If everybody thinks the same way and comes from the same culture, even if everybody speaks the same language or has the same background, they're less likely to think of creative ways to solve problems, right? If you're ever in one of those panic rooms where you have to figure out creatively how to get out of the room, I think you're going to find that if all of you are from the exact same background, and I don't care what background that is, it could be the same. If you're the same age and the same race and you're the same sexual orientation and you're the same religion, you're less likely to think outside the box than if you're all varieties of different ages. Right? People of different ages might look at different contraptions differently. People who grew up rich might understand one thing. People who grew up poor might understand something else. People who grew up black or white or from Japan or from Botswana or from Venezuela might look at solving a problem very differently. Even our languages cannot exactly be translated one to the other because we all come from these different backgrounds. And that creativity is what makes America great. That idea of thinking outside the box allows us to achieve. And so to attack the very diversity that makes America strong is an existential threat to America itself. I think that's what Joe Biden means when he was talking about Trump's existential threat to America. We'll discuss this more when we come back right after this.
Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine. Talking about the existential threat to America and trying to really go deeper because we all have colleagues that are stuck in this whirlwind of lies, corruption, grifting, hatred that is Trumpism. Unless they cancel on me, I'm going to be on Fox and Friends tomorrow morning. And there, who knows what the topic will be because they never really tell me until right before the show. But it'll be something like, why is the left so terrible? Blah, blah, blah. It's hard to break through a narrative. And it's hard to persuade people that everything they see before their eyes happens to be wrong. You know, we all know about the Matrix, right? The red pill and the blue pill. Well, I think Trumpists are stuck inside a matrix. A matrix of Fox News and Breitbart and full of the lies of this president. So much so that when you show them something in front of their face, they avert their eyes. Right? Here, Donald Trump cheated on $1 billion declarations on his taxes. Right? He failed to declare $1 billion in income in the 80s and 90s. We know that now. That's not even his recent tax returns. That's 25 years ago. Now, either he lost $1 billion, making him the single greatest loser in all of American history. Well, let's just say in the 80s and 90s. I can't say all of American history. I don't want to exaggerate. So the single greatest loser for a decade, or the single greatest tax cheat for a decade. And, of course, the first thing to say is it doesn't have to be either or. It can be a little bit of both. He can both be the biggest loser and the biggest tax cheat, right? Because when you lose $1 billion, you're either a terrible, terrible, terrible businessman or a massive tax cheat. More likely, you're both a massive tax cheat and a terrible businessman. And you present that to the Trumpists and they say, Hillary Clinton's emails. Or they say, Joe Biden hugged a woman that didn't want to be hugged. Anything and everything but right before their face. And the same is true when you get to questions of rights. It's amazing. I just came back from a Department of Defense Pride celebration at the Pentagon. And I got to admit, it was a little weird for me. I'd never gone before. I was in the Pentagon, went through all the security checks in the heart of the Pentagon, and there's a bunch of people in uniform. Gay men, lesbian women, transgendered men and women, talking about the right to be who you are as people with courage and dignity patriotically serve their country. And it was beautiful. And it was a little like an out-of-body experience. Because it was just 8 years ago that we had Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It was just 8 years ago that it was illegal for gay and lesbian people, transgender people, to openly serve in the military. And now the president is actually calling on the military to fire its hardworking, patriotic trans servicemen and women. But the DOD was openly defying the president and saying that that was a colossal, bigoted mistake. And I was proud of my country. And a little disoriented. We had gone from saying gay people, trans people are a security threat, to praising their sacrifice one right after the other. Whiplash. And better late than never. But it reminds me how easy it is to say something is true and then suddenly switch and say it's false. Again, circling back to 1984, there's this powerful moment in the book where the countries of the world are divided into four blocks, like Americana and Australasia and Oceania, and I forget all the terms. But the greatest enemy was Oceania, and then suddenly the greatest enemy is Australasia, and actually Oceania is a friend, and you had to tell everyone that what they last believed as true is exactly untrue, and what they believed was untrue is now true, and all the people ran to accept the new truth. And that's how I felt with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, suddenly changing to Department of Defense pride. As they discuss case after case of hero after hero who served their country well and was not allowed to succeed because they're gay, because they're lesbian. It's interesting. One day, I haven't really been asked this, but you know, I am a politician, I am a member of the Virginia House of Delegates. One day someone may ask me, hey, Mark, why didn't you serve in the military? And they'll think, when they ask that question, that they got one on me. Aha, who's this Mark Levine? Why didn't he serve in the military? In which case, I'll respond with the truth. It was illegal for me to serve. That should cause some pause. Indeed, it was. Prior to 1993, prior to Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I couldn't join because it was illegal. The people who served broke the law. Now, it was civil disobedience, and they were brave and honorable in doing so, but it was illegal. And then after Don't Ask, Don't Tell came, I had already come out by 1993. So I couldn't serve for that reason. My country would not allow me to serve in the military. So how could anyone complain about my lack of service? Compare that to, say, Donald Trump, who could have, should have, would have served, except that he made up a lie about his bone spurs in his feet, and his cowardice kept him away. I registered for the draft, and let's face it, plenty of people who would not want to serve have served in the military. But we've had African Americans serve at a time when African Americans were segregated. We had Japanese Americans serve at a time when Japanese Americans were placed in internment camps. And yes, we had gay and lesbian and transgender people serve when they had to hide who they are and who they love. And actually, it was the U.S. law to lie about who they are. And now suddenly, it's all okay. But now suddenly, it's not going to be okay. And those of us who believe that there's a fixed truth, that truth doesn't change depending on who's president, excuse us if we find a little whiplash and we're like, hey, sheeple, where are you going? Why is what's good no longer good? Why do we have to believe and change our minds about who we trust? Joe Biden talked about NATO. Well, I grew up thinking, and you know what, I still think, that NATO is our ally. That England and Germany and France and Italy, that these countries were on our side. They believed in democracy, they believed in freedom, and that we should support our allies. And that we should fear our enemies, people like North Korea, a brutal dictatorship developing nuclear weapons, people like Russia. Countries like Russia, countries like the far-right group in Hungary, the neo-fascist group that Donald Trump is praising. And I realize the President of the United States says, no, you have to love fascism now. You have to love the far-right. You have to hate our allies, you know, believe in terrorists for the European Union or for Mexico. And even if it has to crush our farmers, we have to crush our allies. And it's like, wait, crush our allies, love our enemies? That sounds like George Orwell's 1984. And if you play with our minds enough, if you gaslight us enough, if you tell us up is down and black is white and 2 + 2 = 5 enough, we turn off. That's the thing that Joseph Goebbels talked about, right? You get the public to turn off and mindlessly obey. If you don't know which way is up and you don't know whether something's a truth or a lie and you can't logically figure it out for yourself, you just obey the fearless leader. And that leads to atrocity. The moment we lose our human capacity for reason, the moment we fail to try to distinguish up from down, the moment we fail to use our logic and just go with the flow because it's easier, we cease to become human. Being human is all about making free choices. I mean, that's the heart of who we are as humans, right? Animals go by instinct. As humans, we supposedly can choose. And you don't just have to base this on science. You want to base this on religion? Fine. Take a look at the story of Adam and Eve. They ate from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And prior to that, they had no moral choices. But once they ate and they knew the difference between good and evil, mankind had a choice. And once you give up your power to choose, what are you? Who are you? Are you just a creature? If life has any meaning at all, isn't the meaning in our choices and not what we do simply because we're instinctually required to do it? Yeah, I get hungry. Animals get hungry. Yeah, I get sleepy. Animals get sleepy. Yeah, I get horny. So do animals. But isn't my humanity in making choices to do more than sleep and eat and have sex? Isn't my humanity more in trying to help other humans have a better life? Isn't my humanity more in empathy for one another? Or are you just a robot? You just take the blue pill and believe whatever your fearless leader tells you. I'm going to tell you, if you do that, you've lost your humanity. We'll take a break. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Fulbright scholar and he speaks French, but he couldn't tell you who won the Super Bowl. It's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Inside Scoop, I'm your host, Mark Levine. I've been talking this hour about the existential threat that Donald Trump poses to the United States, to the world, to our whole way of thinking. Joe Biden said that, and immediately everyone went into campaign mode, right? Oh, Joe Biden said this, Joe Biden said that. You know, what does it mean for the 2020 race? How about listening to what he said? An existential threat, that's a very strong thing to say. Because if it's just a threat, we can vote against Donald Trump. We can maybe impeach and remove Donald Trump. At the very least, we get a new president in 2021. The country moves on. We've had bad presidents before. It's a threat. An existential threat is a threat to our existence. It's a threat to who we are. It's a threat to what Joe Biden calls our core values as a nation. I would argue it's a greater threat to our humanity. The heart of Trumpism is looking down on others. The heart of Trumpism is the powerful attacking the powerless. And what's fascinating about Trumpism is all the powerless people who want to feel powerful by attacking another. I've often quoted on this show the famous quote by Lyndon Johnson in 1960, before he was president of the United States, before he was vice president. He said, and I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have it in front of me, if you tell the lowest white man he's better than the best colored man, he will let you pick his pocket. Hell, give him someone to look down on and he will empty his pockets for you. Never has that been more true than today. Right, it's not only billionaires voting for Donald Trump. We don't have that many billionaires in America. Who is Donald Trump actually helping? He's helping billionaires, multi-millionaires. He's helping people who are white and straight and Christian and people who want to oppress others, people who want to, men who want to control women, right? Donald Trump firmly believes a woman doesn't have human agency. She doesn't have the power of her humanity. She's simply a baby-making machine or a sex-making machine. And I say that not just because he cheated on his three wives with a porn star and has sexually assaulted 19 women. No, not only for that personal reason, but for the political reason that he doesn't believe a man's body. He believes a man's body is his own, but a woman's body is not her own. In Alabama, it is legal to force a woman to bear your child by raping her. If you rape a woman, you could go to jail for the rape, probably won't. But the woman, if she tries to end your violent assault of her by getting rid of your unwanted seed in her, she can go to jail for 99 years. And even if you go to jail and get out, or whether you do or you don't, she must work with her rapist to help raise the child, because the rapist doesn't even lose the right to claim the child. This is, Alabama is the ultimate in treating women as mere agencies, right? It's women aren't human. They're something that you get to have fun with and have sex with, and then they make your babies, and if they don't, they get punished. We don't usually treat animals that brutally. I mean, women are like sex robots. And no doubt some man is trying to create a robot that you can have sex with and could create a baby. But you can't. We can't do that yet. Women are still people with rights under the law. And that's that blows the mind of conservatives. I was talking with a woman at a political event just a couple days ago. If she's watching, she knows what I'm about to say. We were talking about abortion. And I told her that I believe that women's bodies belong to themselves and they shouldn't have to do with their bodies things they don't want to do. And she said, well, the woman decided to have sex. She knew what she was getting into. Of course, that discounts rape and incest. That discounts frozen embryos, which she didn't want to talk about. It discounts children who at age 14, 15, 16, 17 don't really know what they're doing. Honestly, it discounts 25-year-old women who are encouraged to do things that they don't want to do. It discounts the failure of birth control. But all right, let's get rid of all of those things that happen all the time and talk about the woman who made a choice to have sex and then decided she didn't want to have a baby. Those, I think, are very rare. But all right. Well, why do we get to decide what she does with her own body? Why is that important? Why don't we have that control over men? If you want to decide what a man does with his own body, you look at the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, which says that people have a right to be secure in their persons against unreasonable searches and seizures. You can't grab a guy and put him in jail or even restrain him unless he's broken the law, done something wrong. But apparently we can restrain a woman for 9 months because we believe that sex is wrong. Okay, she came from a very Catholic perspective. But if we believe that sex is wrong, why are we punishing the woman and not the man, who, let's face it, is probably more likely to have initiated the sexual contact? If she's required to be pregnant and have a baby, why can't we lock up the man for 9 months if she doesn't want the baby? Take away his freedom. Why hasn't anyone proposed that? If the answer is we can take away a woman's freedom because she voluntarily had sex, let's take away a man's freedom because he voluntarily had sex. And if that sounds crazy and idiotic to you, then maybe you should think about it from the woman's perspective. Maybe it is crazy and idiotic to force someone to do something they don't want to do that doesn't affect you. Whether or not a woman decides to have a baby or not, if anything, having a baby affects me more because I believe that no children should starve. I believe that no children should go hungry or lack shelter or lack education. I, as a good liberal, want to support funds to help children. So arguably, it harms me more for a woman to have a child. I could argue that as a society, we're pro-abortion. I don't. But it never harms me for a woman to have an abortion. Just like it doesn't harm me for a woman and a man to use birth control. That's up to them. I don't decide who gets married, and I don't decide who has sex, and I don't decide who has a baby. It's none of my business. It's none of your business. You know what? If it's your child, okay. Your sister, your brother, your good friend, you can counsel anyone you want. But to use the power of government to force people to do things with their bodies they don't want to do, isn't that the definition of oppression? So whether it's race or religion, whether it's gender, sexual orientation, whatever it is, isn't the heart of Trumpism making people who are less powerful suffer so that more powerful people can live better? If it's crushing farmers, taking away Medicare and Social Security from people who are aging and who need it, what's the point? Why? What benefit is derived from denying someone health care? What benefit is derived by making older people homeless? Does it make Donald Trump happy when poor people suffer? Maybe it does. But I suspect it's something deeper. I suspect it's the belief by Donald Trump and other Trumpists that other people just don't matter. The only thing that matters is me. John F. Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And that's the difference between liberals and conservatives today. Do we look out for others or just ourselves? Mark Levine signing off.